Frankie Lindor. He has gone 2 for 3 with a solo homer to left and a single plus a walk. His second at bat left-handed and the 1-1 delivery. A swing and a drive to deep right. Away, back and gone. A grand slam down the right field line by Lindor. And the Indians have scored 5 in the ninth.
This is With an Ohio Bias, a podcast for real fans with D and Jake. You can find our podcast in the Google Play Store for Android users, on iTunes for Apple users, and on the Stitcher app, which is available on all platforms for both tablets and phones, and also on Apple AirPlay within cars. Please rate and review us on those platforms. Also, give us a like on Facebook, and please follow us at With an Ohio Bias on Twitter. You can always listen to any of our podcasts at withanohiobias.com as well. And just like the Indians, he's back, ladies and gentlemen. Kyle Downing from alwaysthejakebaseball.com joins us on the podcast. Welcome back, Kyle.
Hey, it's great to be back with both of you. Good to meet you, Jake.
Same here, man. Let's talk some Tribe.
All right, Kyle. The thing that's got everybody going bonkos was the Buster-only kind of interview with RBS last week, and he kind of mentioned that, of course, we all know Lindor is under control for many years here into the future, the way the Indians do these contracts, but him not having a deal and just, like, even in Seattle, seeing him go all out on the field, making plays, giving up his body, playing for, you know, close to $500,000, you know, where somebody like Bryce Harper might be getting $400 million. Where are we at? You know, I know the Indians probably are going to try to wait through this season again to not do negotiations, but what kind of ballpark or money are we talking that Lindor should get, which everybody in Cleveland feels like we should just basically give him the whole city and the salt mines?
Well, you know, so that's a really good question. I want to first touch on the Buster-only piece. Like, I haven't heard all the details of it yet, but if you're saying, like, Buster Olney's talking about how, like, maybe the Indians are going to trade Francisco Lindor in the next couple of years, that assumes multiple things. First of all, it assumes that, you know, in what would be the end of 2021, when Francisco Lindor's contract is up, it assumes that, you know, the Indians aren't competitive in either 2020 or 2021. And, you know, with all the minor league talent they have coming up, like, that doesn't seem like a realistic thing to me. I know they're losing a lot of players at the end of the year. Buster Olney actually wrote another article on that a while ago about how it's, like, this big problem that the Indians are losing Michael Brantley and Cody Allen and Andrew Miller at the end of this year, and that somehow they're not going to be competitive for the next couple of years after that. And, like, with Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor and, you know, the pitching staff under control through at least 2020 and, like, a couple of baller prospects coming up, I still, like, I know the White Sox and the Twins and whoever else is going to be really good in a couple of years, but I don't see the Indians not being competitive. And as far as Francisco Lindor money, I did a little bit of digging into this based on records for pre-arbitration players, which means players who have not yet garnered enough service time to get raises through baseball's arbitration process. And of course, like, Demetrius and Jake, if I had to make you guess, who would you guess got the biggest pre-arbitration extension in baseball history?
I don't know in baseball history, but I will give a shout out to Trevor Bauer, who's donating his difference to charity. So I will say that real quick, which is pretty cool that Trevor Bauer, even though, as Jake reminds everybody on this podcast, I've been trying to trade this guy for the last 3 years. But Dan said, I don't know. Jake, go ahead. You got a guess?
Mike Trout.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Wow. Hey, Mike. Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, a couple years back, before his first year of arbitration eligibility, Mike Trout signed a 6-year, $144.5 million extension with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And Francisco Lindor is not going to touch that money because while he has the defensive prowess and also plays a premium position, he doesn't have the bat that Mike Trout has. But I did look into, if we're talking like an extension for Francisco Lindor now, within like the next 2 weeks before the season really gets underway, we're probably looking at an extension that attempts to buy out his four remaining years with the Cleveland Indians and two or three free agent years with maybe like a club option. That's just kind of the Indians' style. And looking at the arbitration raises that players like Mookie Betts and Chris Bryant got this year, who again are like probably a little bit better hitters overall than Francisco Lindor, but similar value as far as players go, like those guys got a little over $10 million apiece, right? So we're probably looking at when Francisco Lindor hits arbitration for the first time next spring, him getting something around like an $8 to $10 million salary. And then, you know, $4 to $5 million bumps in the years following. Basically, in order to buy out Francisco Lindor's arbitration years, we're looking at something at least around like $32 to $34 million, right? And that's just for the seasons that the Indians already have him under control for. After that, looking at like the recent extension for Jose Altuve, who got 5 years and $151 million from the Astros. Jose Altuve was like a little bit better in terms of player value last season, but it's a fairly decent comp to use. So looking at Jose Altuve's like $30 million a year, saying Francisco Lindor like maybe comes close to touching that, that would make his free agent seasons valued at like something like $26 to $28 million. So, you know, you figure the Indians probably want to get three free agent years up until whatever it would be, like his age 29 or age 30 season. We're talking about something close to $78 million, maybe a little higher, right? So add the maybe $32, $34 million from the arbitration seasons. That's what, around like $110 million, $112 million, and then if the Indians try to get a club option for like, you know, $28 to $30 million over another free agent season, that's going to come with like an $8 million buyout. So if I had to guess at what a Francisco Lindor extension would look like, it would, if it were to happen this spring, this April right now, right, it's probably something close to a 7-year, $120 million extension, and that includes the buyout of another free agent option year.
Now, Jay, correct me if I'm wrong. The rumor was they offered him $100 million, so plus. So that's kind of in the range of what you're talking. But am I crazy thinking that this is in the Indians' best interest to get it done so we're not sitting here kind of feeling like Francisco Lindor is turning into LeBron James?
Well, the $100 million figure last year, that was rumored. Francisco Lindor himself said in an interview that the Indians didn't actually offer him $100 million. It came close to that. But if I had to guess, that $100 million would have included, like, the value of a club option or something.
Attendance incentives like Edwin's contract has. My only thing is, and I'll leave this and we can keep moving on, but I don't want to see us lose this smile from a guy who's playing with all his heart and giving all his effort night in, night out, because the guy's getting lowballed by the Indians. I think almost every Indians fan kind of feels that way. Like, I've like seen people just pay this guy whatever. I know I said back up the Brinks truck, kind of IT four style, but, I mean, the guy would probably do a lot with the money, considering he's from Puerto Rico, all things, and just take care of his family. I mean, he's that good. I mean, I don't know.
You, as a fan, are 100% correct. I am absolutely there with you. I wish the Indians would just pony up and give Francisco Lindor whatever it takes to keep him in Cleveland. As far as baseball dynamics, like, baseball is a business, right? So here is the very simple and very unfortunate truth of it at this time. Right now, Francisco Lindor, as we talked about last time, has a huge deal with New Balance. Like, if he just goes through arbitration, he's going to make $33, $34 million, you know, through that alone. He has the security that he needs to go for the big money. And as a baseball franchise, if the Cleveland Indians start offering Francisco Lindor $30 million a year for, like, his first 6 or 7 free agent seasons, like, try to get him through age 34 or whatever. They're tying up, like, the Indians' payroll is around, like, $120 million this year. I think it's close to 128, which is a record high, right? The Indians are already operating way over where they've ever operated before. And, you know, because they're not a large market team like the Yankees or the Dodgers, they can't maintain those $200 million payrolls. So if we're looking at a $30 million a year for Francisco Lindor, that's 25% of the team's payroll. And if you have that, then you have to think in those following years, what does the team look like outside of that, right? If we're paying a quarter of our payroll to one player, how do they realistically construct a team around him that can still be successful? And that's really challenging and really difficult.
Well, I can find you $12 million right now, and that's Michael Brantley. But, yeah, I mean, and I love Dr. Smooth as well. But we only got to come up with another 18 mil.
I mean, I guess that's true, if you put it that simply. But unfortunately, we don't know exactly how the rest of the team will form as far as, you know, the pre-arb players and the minor leaguers coming up. And that kind of commitment, like, we remember how hamstrung the Indians were with those Swisher and Bourne contracts, right? Imagine Francisco Lindor gets hurt or, you know, like, becomes that Michael Brantley type that can't stay on the field, and the Indians owe him $30 million for 6 or 7 years. You know, that's just, like, it would be another couple years of, like, those Swisher and Bourne contract years where we're like, why can't we spend money? And the Dolans are like, well, we have, you know, $26 million on the books and failed contracts.
Can we go get some of that? Can we go use some of that money we got back from Francisco Carmona? But, no, go ahead, Jake. I'm just joking.
All right, guys, enough of this contract talk. Let's talk some actual baseball. Now, let's start with the pitching staff. You had to replace Brian Shaw, and we've seen the middle relief outside of Andrew Miller maybe get beat up a little bit here early on. Danny Salazar is a big question mark, and whether he could be a starter again. First, I want to know what your thoughts overall of the pitching staff have been so far, especially with Josh Tomlin's clunker the other night. And is Danny Salazar a guy that could come in and maybe replace that Brian Shaw role going forward?
Here's the tough thing about evaluating the pitching staff from the season so far, and I'm sure you guys know this. It's 5 games. You know, it's one start for each of our starters. It's, you know, a couple, maybe 1 or 2 appearances out of the bullpen for each of those guys. Like, people started freaking out on Twitter when Tyler Olson and Dan Otero, you know, blew the lead the other day or whatever it was. And I mean, we're looking at Tyler Olson, who literally didn't allow a run all of last season. And Dan Otero, who has literally, I think, the best ERA all time for Indians qualified relievers, which is just insane if you think about it. With all the relievers in history, it's Dan Otero among qualifiers, right? This doesn't include Andrew Miller, who hasn't thrown enough innings for the Indians yet to qualify. But among qualifiers, Dan Otero has the best ERA for a Cleveland Indians reliever of all time. Tyler Olson did not allow a run last year. Watching those guys give up like a couple of runs in one game, it doesn't really bother me. Like, yes, we're going to miss Brian Shaw all season, but the bullpen is a strength of this team. And as far as, like, the pitching staff, like, we saw Carlos Carrasco give up a lot of runs. We saw Josh Tomlin give up a lot of runs. And honestly, we expect those outings from Josh Tomlin against, you know, homer-heavy teams, right? He's a fly ball pitcher. He gives up a lot of homers. But Josh Tomlin, as a fifth starter, is also going to have real, real good starts, right? And, I mean, looking at the other direction, like, Mike Clevinger was lights out. You know, Corey Kluber, he had a start today. I don't think he gave up, like, 1 2-run homer to Shohei Ohtani, and that was it. Like, the pitching staff is in really, really good shape. It's a little too early, I think, to evaluate it seriously. If, you know, it continues, like, clunkers like that continue into early May, you know, then I'll start to, like, think about it. But, like, in April, I barely even look at the overall stats of these players because it's too small of a sample size to evaluate people from.
the pitching staff, it's a little bit early to tell what's going on for sure. And you obviously seem to be confident in what it projects out to be throughout an entire season. So happy to hear about that. One thing's a little concerning about the offense so far this season, and it's the fact that this team can't put together three or four consecutive hits, that they're only scoring really when they're hitting home runs. So I ask you again, is it again way too early to start worrying about anything, or do you maybe see something here that is of some concern?
Definitely way too early to start worrying about anything. We have less than a week's worth of games. There's, you can't really evaluate anything on such a small sample size. And like, here's an example. Jose Ramirez, right, is 1-for-21, including today's stats, I think, with a homer, right? 1-for-21 is terrible. That's like a .056 batting average. But if he goes out and has a five-hit game tomorrow, which he has done in the past, I think he did it twice last year, then all of a sudden he's like 6-for-26. And then, you know, that's still like just a little bit above 200. But then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, it's not that bad. It's just a slow start. And it's just things can change so quickly, so early on in the season. If you look at Jose Ramirez's worst slump last year, then, you know, it's no different than a little bit of a slump at the beginning of the season. I don't know. I'm worried looking at Tyler Naquin, as, you know, many angry Cleveland Indians fans are, and also Bradley Zimmer, just because they just seem to look so overmatched at the plate right now, right? Tyler Naquin, one of his at-bats the other day, he swung at two pitches that literally hit the dirt about 2 feet before they got to him. And, you know, that kind of concerns me a little, just seeing how overpowered he seems and how Zimmer seems to be striking out a lot. I don't have stats to back up Zimmer, so you'll have to forgive me if I'm wrong. It's just the impression I've gotten that looking at him on video. But that's where my concerns lie more, is that, you know, these guys just look overpowered.
Okay, well, I can take that answer. Not too bad. I guess then the logical follow-up for that would be, do you have any other things that you've seen or noticed so far from this Indian season so far? And how big of an impact do you think Michael Brantley can be when he gets back and healthy? Do we need to run him out there in bubble wrap?
I guess the answer to the second question is sure, yes. If that's what keeps him healthy, put bubble wrap around his ankle. If it takes 20 points off his batting average, we still have a .280 hitter with 20 home runs. Did Michael Brantley have in the 2014 and 2015 seasons?
Well, sure. He was a top three MVP candidate. I'm just wondering if we're at a point now where the injuries are so much that maybe this starts playing into his head.
You know, I am not so trained to evaluate the psychology of players, but what I can tell you is that, you know, last year we saw that when Michael Brantley was healthy, he made the All-Star team. You know, he had fantastic stats at the end of the season. You know, he struggled a little bit in the playoffs coming off of that ankle injury, obviously, but when Michael Brantley is healthy, there is no reason to think that he has the yips or anything. You know, we've seen healthy Brantley, you know, just bounce back to exactly what he was doing in the seasons where he was an MVP candidate. And as far as other things that I've noticed early on, Demetrius, you'll remember that we talked a little bit about Yan Gomes a while back. A fun little stat that I wanted to throw out there that I thought was interesting is Yan Gomes has been striking out more than we'd hoped, but he has had, like, I think 12 plate appearances prior to today's game. And in those 12 plate appearances, he had seen 61 pitches, which is an average of a little more than 5 pitches per plate appearance. MLB average last year was 3.9. So Yan Gomes, early on, at least seeing a lot of pitches.
Yeah, Kyle, definitely wanted to have you back on the podcast just because you batted 1,000 with the Yan Gomes and Matt Belisle, even though he looked like he was going to give it up like Otero did, like you already mentioned. So definitely remember you mentioning Yan Gomes coming together with his patience at the plate. Well, we know what's exciting coming up here is the home opener.
Yeah, man. I'm as psyched as anybody.
Can you – I mean, I remember 1996, the snowstorm. I think we're going to have a little bit of inclement weather, but I don't think it's going to be an avalanche. But have you – can you throw us a couple of fun home opener facts?
Yeah, actually, I looked this up a little bit earlier today, actually. So, basically, I believe all time, the Cleveland Indians are 60-58 in home openers, or maybe 60-57. I can't remember exactly. I wish I had written it down, but that's good. As you know, above a 500 record as a franchise. In the last 20 years since Jacobs Field, or, you know, now Progressive Field, I guess, opened, well, 24 years, I guess it would be. The Indians are 12-12 in home openers. They have lost 7 of their last 9, which is not fun. But, you know, hopefully the Indians can add a W to the win column this year and get above 500 since the opening of the Jake.
Indians bring this home opener home, or do they bring a win home?
I don't know. The Royals don't really have a complete ball club this year. So obviously if we were to look at any like legitimate projecting site or statistics site, like 538, we would see the Indians heavily favored to win. I don't see, like, you know, baseball can happen. Anything in baseball can, let me rephrase that. Anything can happen in baseball, obviously, but the odds to win are definitely in the Indians' favor. And as a Cleveland Indians fan, I'm going to say, yes, the Indians are going to smash the Royals in the home opener, of course.
To get all your good information and all the sites you contribute to, Kyle.
Hey, thank you for having me on. I'm always happy to share anything. Visit us at alwaysthejakebaseball.com. We got new content coming out constantly. Follow us on Twitter. Our social media guy had an awesome video the other day of Edwin Encarnacion's Inside the Parker with Mario sounds, which is a lot of fun. Just want to plug my site a little bit there, and thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to talk a little baseball with you, talk a little Tribe.
Thanks, Kyle. We will talk soon.
Go Tribe.
Absolutely. As always, roll Tribe. You can hear more of things like this on With an Ohio Bias. Be checking us out, withanohiobias.com. You can find us on iTunes, the full podcast on iTunes. Just search With an Ohio Bias. Give us a like, subscribe, and write us a review even. And we would really appreciate that. Thanks for listening, and we will talk at you next time.